I was thinking. So I've been looking at like a place to live in like in Jakarta and the surrounding areas, right? Mm-hmm. Because by the way, like Jakarta is now unaffordable. Like people talk about gentrification, and like I really feel the effects of gentrification, I think, in Jakarta, as someone whose family like have been like in Jakarta for a long time. Like now my generation is like the first generation that can't afford a house in Jakarta, like if I were to buy it with my own money. So I've been looking at places that are basically considered part of Bogor, Tangerang, Depok.
Jabotabek, Jakarta.
Yeah. Bekasi. Some people are saying like, oh, if you want to buy in Jakarta, most of the houses in Jakarta are now like secondhand houses, right? It's like people used to live there already and now they're selling it. So it's not like new. And then it's houses in these new, like new clusters in Bogor, Tangerang, Depok, Bekasi that are they're building it new, right? And so some people say like, oh, it's better to like buy houses that are new because houses that have been lived in, like you don't know the history of that house. So there's a lot of like supernatural, there's a lot of like spirits in that house, or there's a lot of like the spirits can live in like paintings or like vases or like things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And some people say like if it's a house that's like newly built, it hasn't had that history, so it's not going to have that. But then someone was telling me that that's not true, because while they're having the process of building the house, actually like the construction workers, they sleep there, right? They sleep where the houses are going to be built. And it's like the spirits that are that stick with them, they can also live in the house that they're building because it's still like in the same whatever. And basically, like, this is a big thing in Indonesia. Like, people want to make sure that their house is like so-called quote-unquote clean, right? And you can't really guarantee, like,
but I think a lot of Indonesian people like already knows that those type of like, how do you say, like ghosts are already like come with the package, you know? When you buy a plot of land or you buy a house, I think most of the people that I know, they already considered that, and maybe they do the cleansing after they invite a priest or whatever for the opening house.
You know? Yeah, I didn't think about it that much until, because some people say like, oh, even if it, some people said if it's just a plot of land, there's no ghosts. Like
there, of course there are ghosts on the plot.
Yeah. I don't know why those people said that. Yeah, I realize that's like a very common thing. Like everyone in Indo will always like bless the house in which like when they move into the house, like they have someone sort of like pray for like the new life in the house and things like that. And yeah, like you said, like the cleansing and everything. Even me like speaking about this in English, I realized like other, like maybe other people, when they say someone bless the house, like they probably don't think about it in the way like Indonesians practice it, right? Like
The word cleansing is not right.
Yeah, like there's no direct translation.
Oh, you haven't met my best friend, right? Because she used to like join this type of community that we're talking about with Damar, and there was a period of time when she was really a freak about it. Like she was really into tarot cards. She was really into like reading people's energy and sending people like people's energy, or like asking for people's energy. And she's like freaked that way. The thing that she used to do. So we used to live in a, like, how do you call that? It's not apartment, kos-kosan.
Like student housing.
Yeah, like student housing, yeah. So in front of like our student housings, there's like an empty scary house that we need to pass. It's really creepy. And our there's like a small road that you have to like walk. I mean, you can go in with your car, but sometimes we just walk. One day we were talking about ghosts and everything, and my best friend was like, "Ah, yeah, you know that house? I used to like send those ghosts to that house, just like pile them all together over there." And I was like, "So I was like, oh, this is why." Yeah, I'm like speaking of houses. Yeah, don't get one of those houses. No. Well, anyway, in this episode, we interview a scholar, a researcher.
Yes, Andamar. His professor or his mentor is doing scientific research on supernatural phenomena, and he's doing business psychology research on people who interact with the supernatural world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So should we introduce him?
Andamar Pradipta is a professor, researcher, and enthusiast of supernatural phenomena. He is pursuing his PhD at University Malaysia, Kelantan, where he studies business psychology in relation to dukun.
He obtained his bachelor's degree in 2014 from the University of Indonesia, majoring in social anthropology. He then continued his study at Central European University, Hungary, and graduated with an MA in Sociology and Social Anthropology in 2016. Due to his anthropological background, he has a strong fascination with qualitative research, which he actively works on and develops at Indonesia International Institute for Life Sciences, where he also teaches.
I'm Damar, first and foremost. Nice to meet you all. So basically, I'm a university teacher. I teach at the Indonesia International Institute for Life Sciences. I've been doing so for 4 years, more or less, I think. I teach at the business department, actually, but my educational background was in anthropology and sociology. So I got this offer to do PhD in Malaysia. And that PhD is in psychology. And the professor contacted me first before I contacted him. And he said, like, "Oh, Damar, would you like to do this research on dukuns?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, sure. Let's do that." Because I think after knowing that my background is actually in anthropology, he kind of like thought of me as this potential project for him, because I think his main research is actually is on supernatural things. So basically, before he met me, that's very romantic. So before he met me,
it started with a romance.
I know, right? Well, I mean, like, we kind of developed this bromance over time. But yeah, so like I think before me, I think he was doing research on brain waves on people who are possessed, like that. That's yeah. Really so yeah, so he's a very interesting guy. You should like actually try to interview him. He's Indonesian, by the way, but he's a professor in University Malaysia Kelantan. So yeah, that's how I got into this research. I wouldn't call this research like a dukun research, because like most of the people that I talk to do not identify themselves as dukuns, but rather I think like indigo people with skills and but they do offer services either for money or like something else. So yeah, that's what I've been doing now, talking to these people. Yeah.
Are you allowed to talk more about the findings of that that other professor that you're now working with about what findings did he discover from studying the brainwaves of people who are possessed? And like when you say possessed, like how possessed, like when they're in trance in the moment? Or of course not, right? Because when you're in trance, you can't be under like an MRI, right?
Yeah, true. So I think he used these two different devices. One is for aura reading. One is for brainwave reading. So basically, I don't know for sure what he found, but there's some like disturbance in the brainwave and in these possessed people. But then again, there's no way to prove that these people are actually possessed, because again, here in Indonesia, we have these different kinds of possessions, right? Mm-hmm. Spirit possession. So we have, can I say these jargons in Bahasa?
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, so we have like possession, like kesurupan, and then we have ketempelan. Mm. Right, ketempelan is like when you're being followed or something actually latches on you.
Yeah.
There's also kesambar and whatnot. You know, like
okay, wait. What is kesambar?
Yeah. What is kesambar?
Kesambet. It's not kesambar, but kesambet with the T at the end. Yeah.
What's the difference between kesambet and ketempelan?
Ketempelan is like, just as I said earlier, like it's like when something or like someone who's unseen latches on you, like either on your back or like wherever. Kesambet is a different term. I think it is used for describing a lot of different phenomena. But one example is like when you had this spiritual or supernatural experience that actually opens up your supernatural eyes, so to speak, right? Mata batin, right? So that's what kind of kesambet or like, most people who are kesambet, they tend to start hearing things and seeing things.
But so, would indigo people like clustered into kesambet group?
Oh,
if that what you were saying, if it's just like apa tadi mata batin, right?
Mata batin, yeah. So now there, these indigo people, they have different histories, right? Mm. So some of them actually like started out as a kesambet victim, but most of them are actually natural. So basically, ever since they were born, ever since they were younger, I think they already like developed these different skills and like sensitivity, right? I think I wouldn't necessarily say that they're like kesambet, I think when they were kids, but they definitely developed these different sensitivities gradually. So it's not like an overnight process, like one day you wake up just having these awesome skills. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't happen like that. So but I think when you ask these indigo people, like the way they actually realized that they had sensitivities, well, like the phenomena are always the same. Like they would have like headaches and stuff. Mm-hmm. They would like start hearing things, and you know, like some like even start. You know, like there are these like people who they can see, but are not actually there, and they're trying to communicate with them. So stuff like that. Definitely not the same category as kesambet. Like kesambet is just like boom, suddenly you like can hear things, and and it's actually dangerous. I had a friend who was who had this, and. Yeah, I don't know, like, if I can say this, but she ended up, not being able to communicate well because, like, she's always getting these different communications from things that we can't see.
So, you study psychology, right? So where is the line between, you having this, indigo... talent and psychotic episode.
Oh,
like what you said, what happened with your friends, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, scientifically speaking, we still don't know how to categorize these different phenomena, because like for now, I think we can always say like, oh yeah, it's a psychotic episode and whatnot, but there's always more to it. I think people are now more aware that have you ever heard of EMP, electromagnetic phenomenon?
No. What is it?
No. So yeah, it's something to do with electromagnetic frequencies and stuff. So basically people are getting more interested in like actually finding out like the different electromagnetic wavelengths and whatnot in these people's brains. So like these are not actually seen as subjective experiences, but rather physical experiences. Physical experiences. So even I still today don't know like how to put it. Well, how to like actually connect between these two, because like, we can always say that these different experiences actually affect you psychologically, but these phenomena themselves, I can't really like quantify them still. So it doesn't, well, it's not actually part of my job in this research to actually prove whether like these are like actual tangible phenomena. Right. So what I research is like the psychological experiences that these people are going through. Yeah.
Could you talk more about that?
Yeah. Can you give an example?
Yeah, sure. Like for example, I'm giving you this very simple example. Like I like 2-3 months ago, I talked to this tarot reader. Do you guys follow like tarot trends and stuff?
No, but most of my close friends, they are tarot mm-hmm. readers, and they are part of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm also interested in the pool mm-hmm. that you're doing. Is it based in Jakarta mm-hmm. or? Because I mm-hmm. used to join, not join, but my mm-hmm. my best friend used to join this Indigo mm-hmm. Club in Jakarta, which is quite
big. Oh, are you? Oh, wow. Okay. So
yeah, but you first.
Maybe you guys know the same people.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah. So basically, I talked to like 3-4 different tarot readers. Like most of them have like the same experience, right? So they interpret and like perceive like the skills that they have as instincts, you know, but some tarot readers actually see this sensitivity as like something that's supernatural, so something that's that comes from a being of unknown origins, right? But like there's this going debate of like whether tarot reading is actually supernatural or not. But bottom line is like there's this like difference in perspectives of people, like a group of people who have the exact same skill set, right? Mm-hmm. Even though like they can do the same thing, they like actually perceive it differently, right? And that's actually what I'm trying to see here, right? So like the different perspectives and the different perspectives and understanding of the same thing, right? Yeah. So that's
So where did you do this research? Is it in Indonesia or in Malaysia?
In Indonesia, definitely.
And
so how exactly do you conduct the research? Like how do you mm-hmm. like what is the hypothesis that you're that you and your team are mm-hmm. trying to prove, and how do you go mm-hmm. about seeking these subjects, and how mm-hmm. like what mm-hmm. is like do you how is the research process with the subjects?
Okay, so we're actually doing 3 different research on the same subject. The main thing that I'm doing is actually something a bit less related to, you know, like the psychological experience itself. So we're doing business psychology.
Hmm.
On Dukun, so like Dukun branding, Dukun marketing, and stuff like that. You know, that's the main thing that I'm doing. But as a PhD student, you have to like write different papers before you can like actually defend your dissertation. Mm-hmm. So I'm also doing, that's the main thing of business psychology. And the other things that I'm doing is like that, different experiences on the same phenomenon. Different perceptions on the same phenomenon. Like especially, I'm talking especially on tarot readers. And the other one we can't really disclose yet.
Okay.
So yeah, it's still we're still in the process of collecting data, but in terms of hypotheses, we can't really, develop a hypothesis on these kinds of research because everything is very exploratory. These are unknown territories. So if you look at the existing literature on dukkhas and whatnot, usually they're very ethic. So like in social research, we have this two different kinds of research, ethic and emic. Mm-hmm. So have you ever heard of that? Those two? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So basically most researchers are doing it like very ethic fashion, but we're trying to do it in a very in an amic fashion, because like we're trying to actually understand these different subjective experiences. And yeah, so that's
I see. And when you pitch this idea, what was your professors or colleagues mm-hmm. thought about the idea? Was it something that excite them, or I don't know?
The original idea came from my professor, right? Uh-huh. So this is pretty much his baby, but he needs someone who can actually endure doing these kinds of interviews, right? Yeah. So I happen to like have that endurance, like experiencing these things. Yeah, so this came from him, but then, you know, like I talked to my colleagues about like my research, and they're like, their reaction was as expected. Mm. So like, yeah, what are you doing? And like, how can you like actually observe these kinds of phenomena? Yeah. Like, what does that have to do with psychology? That was your question, Ruth, I think. Even for researchers, I think this is like very, very new and very, very strange. I don't know, like maybe this is my, after I started doing this research on dukkhas, like I wouldn't say like I become more of a believer of fate, but before I started doing, before I met my professor, I was doing an essay for my university's website on dukkhas. So like, I don't know, like maybe this this research was actually meant for me. I don't know. Like it's, I don't believe in those stuff, but destiny, like I'm not a believer of destiny, so to speak, but, it certainly points to that direction. So,
But what was your, where did you stand on dukkhas mm-hmm. or anything that it's clinic in Indonesian before you wrote your first paper on dukkhas?
My stand on it is that it's very important to understand. Dukkhas as a phenomenon, I think it's actually the full-fledged form of like things that are more pressing, which is like how Indonesians are still into like magic thinking and stuff like that, right? And I think it's something that is important to understand, but it's not actually important to solve, if you catch what I mean. Like I wouldn't say it's a social pathology, but we have to understand it in order to position ourselves better in the society, because like whatever you do, you can't really get rid of these kinds of beliefs, and we shouldn't, I think. Yeah.
Okay, which led me to my mm-hmm. question about the mm-hmm. new bill of RKUHP, right? Mm-hmm. About mm-hmm. dukkhas. So where do these mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's like an organization, because you're approaching it from the business perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So it's already a corporate, and there's a bill that's going to prevent that. And where what's the conversation about it in that community?
Well, they don't think much of it, actually.
Because they don't take the government seriously?
Not really. Not because of that. But these things actually happen in the like on the grassroots level, right?
Right.
So,
so they're not affected by the government law?
Well, of course, you can't control what are like the things that happen on the grassroots level.
No, but that's what I mean by not taking the government seriously, because it's like a common practice, right? So how can you even tackle it?
Yeah, exactly.
So people were maybe it's just on the paper.
Yeah, true.
So why do you guys think the government put that law in place, banning the practice of dukun?
Well, I mean, like, for me, I think the perspective comes from like the idea of like seeing these practices as fraudulent. Mm. Like, as you know, like there's this very famous dukun who rose to fame like recently. Her name is Ningsih Tinampi. Have you ever heard of
The one with the in Kalimantan with the red dukun and.
Ningsih Tinampi is actually she resides in Jember, I think, but basically she does healing for different kinds of illnesses and diseases. She charges like a shit ton of money, so like people from all over Indonesia would come to her to ask for healing, like even for cancer, and like, and she charges them a lot of money. And I think that could be detrimental to like these people who actually rely on her. So it's you could look at it as like fraudulent, but at the same time, there are still a lot of people who do not believe in modern medication.
It reminded me of my time when I was in Makassar, and I had a lot of stories about colleagues and acquaintances who were doing their internships at hospitals there, and they said that, like, you know how like a lot of medical students from Jakarta, they are required to serve like internship and fellowship in the rural areas. And so like these are very city people who are very like modernized and everything, and they don't believe in these things, and then they go to the rural areas, and Makassar isn't even rural, but it's just like outside of Jakarta, and they were so shocked that they have no control about like how to conduct a medical procedure, because sometimes a patient would be lying there like bleeding because they got into a car accident and they're like in a coma, and then some dukun walks in, sucks blood out of their body, and then all of a sudden the patient comes back alive as if nothing ever happened, like maybe just scratches, but like all of the organs are working completely fine. The patient is like breathing completely fine. They don't need any medical assistance devices. And so like things like that, like where I'm reminded that, you know, like in healthcare and the medical system in Indonesia, maybe not in Jakarta, but in like places outside of Jakarta, like dukun is an extremely it's like part of the practice, you know, like it's very common.
True. Yeah, ubiquitous, I would say. Yeah. Like they're everywhere. Yeah, well, like, are you sure that they're not like vampires or something?
Suck all the blood. Yeah, because that, yeah.
Yeah, they suck. Like.
I mean, that was a story that I was told. I mean, I've been told other stories as well. Like, I mean, when I was in Makassar, I think that was the time where Makassar was also the first city that I spent outside of Jakarta. And I remember this incident very clearly, where people were telling me stories about how there's this walking stick, and this walking stick is basically like someone with superpowers who is an elder, and because he's already old, he's not able to like walk around and see. So the walking stick is his eyes, and the stick will float
into the city, and people have to part ways to make way for the stick to go through. And the stick will be his eyes to see what is happening around. But the person controlling that stick is like sitting in like his house, you know. And when they were telling me a lot of these stories, and like also the bisu, you know, the in the Bugis culture, there's the bisu and they dance with the knives and everything. And at the time I was like, there's no way, there's no way, you know, there's no way this happens, like that, like there's no, and all of a sudden this flock of like crows, I guess not crows, like just black birds, like so many started flocking through the building, because I kept saying, no, that's not true, that's not true. And like the people who were telling me, like were telling me, like, shut the fuck up, because look what you made happen. Like all of these birds started getting angry and started flocking into the building, because it was kind of an open building. And in my mind I was like, oh, there's no way that those birds did that. But like the more that I think about it now, the more I realize, like, you know, maybe just like don't deny the powers higher than, you know, higher than you. Like, because of course they do exist. And yeah.
True, true. Wow. That's, yeah, please take me there. I'm very curious.
Well, I wanted to ask you, so have you, because you're in constant interaction with these people, right? Have you experienced things yourself that you feel is different before and after you started this research?
Well, yeah, of course. I think, of course, there's like, well, I've been drawn to this even before, like, I started the research. Otherwise, like, I wouldn't have agreed to do it, right? I don't know, like, as were, like, all the other kids my age at the time, like, I was, like, very fascinated with ghosts and stuff, you know, like, and I grew up in Bogor, like, born and raised, and I think, like, here, everything is, like, actually, people associate everything with like, this supernatural phenomena. Yeah, and I think Ruth can, like, confirm that.
I don't know about Bogor, but my parents are Japanese from Solo in Jogja, so it's kind of the same, I feel like. It's already part of the culture, so even though my parents per se, they don't really believe in this such of like stuff, but growing up, when I, you know, when I was like 12 or something, when I have my first period, like my grandma would like bathe me in flowers and like that kind of stuff, and singing in Japanese. So yeah, I do understand when you say, like, when you're kind of obsessing growing up about ghosts and stuff.
True, yeah. Wow, so we have a lot of similarities. We are both from Bogor, and our families are from Solo.
Are you really?
is this fate?
Wow.
Like, what is?
And gue curiga kayaknya yang lu research itu gue tahu deh grupnya.
Oh
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I could be wrong. But yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. What were we talking about? Oh my God, sorry.
I asked you if you started experiencing different things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In your own life.
Well, like, yeah, I've had experiences with ghosts, definitely. But I didn't really think much of those experiences. But, like, well, I did this interview with a group of, like, Indigo people. So, like, a mutual friend of ours actually, like, introduced us. And so basically, we came to this interview. Like, there were three of them. And I also, I brought my wife to the interview because, like, one of them is, like, the friend. So we sat there and we talked about, you know, like, usual Dukan stuff and, you know, like, yeah, all the formalities. But then they're like, they said to me, like, your chakra is all over the place. It's uneven and you need to balance it out. And I'm like, yeah, I was like, I didn't think much of it. But then, like, they say, like, we can see who you were in your past life. And, like, you know, like, there's this mental or spiritual scars in you that you didn't even realize are in you.
From a past life.
From a past life. And so they said that me and my wife actually knew each other in the past life, but my wife was the guy, I was the girl, but we couldn't get married because we're from different social levels, like different caste. So basically, they said, yeah, I'm sure the first time you met each other, you felt like you've known each other like for a long time, blah, blah, blah. And like, it was true. So I met my wife through Bumble. Like, I still remember like when it was like we matched on August 31st. We first met in September. We got engaged in October.
Wow.
We got married in December, right? So it's like, it's just like, you know, like I met her and like, oh, okay, this is the one, I think. So yeah, so it just, and like there are a lot of similarities between us. Like we actually look a lot like each other. We're both left-handed and yeah, like everything like was so weird.
Were you guys shocked when you guys, when the Dukun told you that you guys knew each other from a past, you guys were, I guess, lovers from a past life, or what do you call those lovers that didn't come true? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, you know, like the first thing that I, you know, like noticed is that like the Dukun said that, oh yeah, you're the girl, she's the guy. And like, that's the first thing that I said to my wife before we got married. Like, so I told my wife that deep inside, I'm a girl, right? Mm. So well, there's a chance that you might have to treat me like a girl, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I always knew that like I'm very, very sensitive and whatnot, you know. Mm-hmm. So like when they told me that I was a girl in my past life, I wasn't even shocked, like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe that's correct. And so yeah, so we started talking and like after that, after they told me like about this past life thing, I started having visions. Like, I don't know, like if maybe they're just imagination, but like they confirmed all of my like visions. Oh yeah, yeah. I said to them, yeah.
Vision through like dreams or what kind of visions?
No, like as we were talking, so like we hung out like from the afternoon to like quite late in the evening, not in the evening, but maybe like 6-7 p.m. So as we were talking, like I started like having these visions and like I started seeing this girl in like red kabaya and whatnot. Like, so yeah, I started seeing this girl in red kabaya and like they're like, oh yeah, now you've seen you, blah blah blah.
Oh, you've seen yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
So like I started having this like weird headache here, like yeah, I think it's on my left side. Yeah. Yeah, I started having visions and like these visions wouldn't go away like for like 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So yeah, 2 weeks, yeah. Because like the next day after that day we met these Dukuns, they took us to Apura at a Hindu temple to cleanse me because like my chakra was like all over the place. But I think it didn't really work for me, I think, because like I've always made peace like with how messed up my head is. So yeah, so maybe I didn't really respond to the treatment or to the ritual. Yeah.
I'm curious about the term Dukun. Would they agree to be called Dukun? Because from the people that I know, they were like, oh, we're not Dukun, we're different. Because the idea of Dukun is very traditional, like a guy in a blancón, you know.
So basically, the people that I've talked to are like actually modern Dukuns, right? Yeah. These are young people. Like the oldest that I met was like 36, 37. These are like incredibly young people. So some of them actually like admitted to like, yeah, this is Pradukunan and blah, blah, blah. But they don't actually interpret it the way we used to interpret it, right? I think these younger dukuns, they see this not as like that profession that we've been familiar with. I think they're more adjacent to like indigo people who actually like want to help. So some of these people do not actually charge fees to like their patients. They're just there to help. And a lot of them, they brand themselves differently. So like if we go back to like this, well, the business psychology part of the research, a lot of them would call themselves, like empath. Mm. Empath. Like, are you familiar with that term, empath?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People who can like empathize with energy and stuff. There's this one, a lady that actually proclaims to be like the first demonologist in Indonesia. So
demonologist,
yeah. So like Ed and Lorraine Warren, like, are you guys familiar with those people? Yeah, the couple from the Conjuring films. Yeah. So so this lady, she said that she's a demonologist, but I think at the same time, has the same skill set as like traditional dukuns, but she actually, she has like different literatures. She talked to me about, the things that she read, things that she actually learned, like instead of your regular santet and palette, like she said, like, oh, what I do is like I adopted chaos magic, and I do it to like exorcise, right? Call upon like these different spirits and stuff. But they're still aware of like who they are, I think, mostly, right? Even like there's this one lady who's like very open about it. We're dukuns, like, but because she just got into like doing that, she just started, she said like, yeah, gue dukun treni, blah blah blah. They still use that term, but I think the practice itself has been like interpreted differently, like in different people, I think, especially with tarot readers. Like, tarot readers are like strictly, well, we're not dukuns, right? Yeah. Except when they started out as dukuns, right? So some tarot readers actually started out as dukuns, and like, yeah, you can call them dukuns, but some others, they just learn tarot and
become a tarot reader. Yeah.
So that's that. I think in every culture you have that concept. Like in Indonesia we have dukun, in Malaysia they have bomoh, I think. Mm. In some other cultures they have like the name for it. But basically they're the exact same. The role of dukun could be interpreted and translated in like different contexts, right? That specific role always exists in all cultures.
So speaking of Malaysia, can I go back to my earlier question? What was the finding of your colleague in Malaysia when he was studying the brain waves of the people?
The professor? Mm-hmm. So basically like he didn't talk to me much about it actually. So like I think that research actually got him in, under a bad light, because like I think like there was like this news article that talked about, oh yeah, there's this professor from Kelantan and like he's using government money to like talk about like spirit possessions, So maybe that's why he didn't talk much about it. But I vaguely remember him talking about like there's a difference in brainwave in people with spirit possessions, but you can like sort of see the same brain waves in people who have like some sort of like psychotic episodes, but I can't remember like which types of like episodes. But yeah, so it's that's his conclusion, I think. But in terms of, you know, like whether proving it is a spiritual phenomenon or not, like we still can't do it,
Like of course it's not proving whether it's like a psychotic episode or like a supernatural thing happening. But I think I'm curious about like how, because I feel like this, like now that people are finally talking about decolonization, blah, 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 I think that helps embrace the fact that these things aren't just like, aren't just some like woo-woo thing, that these things have always existed, and it's, and now people are saying, people are calling it like, oh, ancestral knowledge, deep ancestral knowledge, and things like that. But at the same time, I think there's more interest in interpreting these things from an academic or scientific perspective. Like, I think people said that, oh, you know, like way back in the day, pregnancy was like a quote unquote supernatural thing, because you didn't know, like you didn't have the ultrasound to to like see what's happening with the baby and things like that. A lot of mental health issues that was previously thought of as like demon possession, it turns out it's like a disorder, right? Because finally now there are MRIs to show that there are like differences in the brain structure. So I think like it's such a like interesting new breakthrough, and like, is it a breakthrough in academia or like new field that is getting a lot of interest in academia?
Well, actually it's not, like people
maybe from the Western perspective, but from Indonesia, I think we're all always like capsized by this
true
magic phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, like from a Westerner point of view, I think like it's not like there's this thing with like Western produced papers on like things of the, well, on similar topics where like they only scratch the surface, like basically like they only like listen to stories and stuff. But I think now is actually the time that we actually address the, you know, like the more tangible explanations of like these kinds of phenomena, because again, I think like people are getting more aware that they're living in a bubble. I mean, like people who live in Jakarta, Bogor, and like you know, like one of those big cities, I think we've come to a realization that like we are the only ones who do not see dukuns as important as like people in like more rural areas. So I think but again, it's
so say something. So that's actually interesting about what you just said, and it ties back to what you were saying about like how a lot of the people that you've interviewed and even you yourself, that you guys experience headaches and things like that. So I've also like spoken to people who used to be like very dukun, like extremely skilled dukun, and I didn't even know that they were they used to be extremely skilled, because they got rid of that. They purposely sought exorcism to get rid of that skill completely. And when I asked them if they miss having that power, because they were so powerful back then, but they said like, no, like I would rather just like have all of these powers taken out of me and just like live a peaceful life and things like that, because it was like extremely, they were suffering in life and they couldn't bear, like not just physically, like not just headaches and things like that, but I think it's like a more mental and emotional instability. Like you're on, you're constantly in chaos with the supernatural world. It's like you have that skill, and then after that, you have to like master another skill, then master another skill, then master another skill. And maybe they're like on the extreme end of the spectrum. But I know several people who have like chosen to get rid of that skill actually. And so like, talking to them, it's like I think before I also had this like fascination, but I used to, how do I say this, maybe I also viewed them like, oh, these are people who are higher, like they have a higher sensitivity than us, or or like indigo people, right? But then now I'm like, well, if these people also suffer, maybe they're just regular people who
they actually are, like, they want to live a normal life. So a lot of them do, right? The Dukun that took me to, like, this pura, like, so I met her again, like, months later. And I said to her, like, yeah, after knowing this, these things about my past life, like, what do I do? Like, and she goes, like, yeah, what if you do? Like, yeah, just live your life. Like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, you know these things about your past life. It doesn't mean that you have to change the way you live. It doesn't mean that you have to change your priorities, right? So yeah, that's what I've been doing now. I think a lot of these Dukuns, they want to live a normal life, you know, like, and if you've been talking to a lot of them, like, you realize that, like, the more you talk about these things and the more you want to know about their powers and the more you want them to demonstrate their powers, like, the more annoyed they become.
Yeah.
So they, like, when they meet people, they just want to talk about, like, something else. And, like, and one other reason is that, like, whenever they like actually use their powers, it would drain their energy. So they just want to be left alone. So basically this is what I got from, like, talking to them. Basically, like, these powers come actually from, you know, like, sort of like the presence. Yeah, the presence that guards you. Yes, it's hereditary. Yeah, it is passed down to, like, your descendants, but basically, like, what's being passed down is the guardians.
Yeah. Right?
So basically, like, these Dukuns would have someone who guards them and gives them their powers, right?
They usually call them guardian angels. Like, they're my guardian angels.
Yeah. True, right? Yeah, guardian angel, or, like, a lot of people would call them kodam, right, here in Indonesia, I think, right? So basically, the reason why they help people is because, like, this kodam wants them to help people, right? And the reason why, like, a lot of them do not actually charge people for their services is because their kodams forbid them, you know, like, forbid them getting money from other people. Yeah. So, so that's, they're actually facing, like, a dilemma of, like, you know, like, I have this power, I want to live a normal life, but I have the obligation to, like, actually help people. Mm. So, that's a bit sad, huh?
Yeah. That's my best friend.
Yeah.
That's interesting because the people that I talked to recently, they didn't feel like those were guardian angels. They felt like those were, like, monsters inside of them. And when they sought to be exorcised, when they sought exorcism, they felt relieved that those monsters exited them.
Yeah, because it becomes a burden to them, right? It's like they don't want it. They don't want those powers, right? They do not want those obligations, I think. Yeah, especially with these younger Dukuns, like, they just want to, like, a lot of these younger Dukuns have full-time jobs.
These people are, like, you know, their mothers, their fathers, they're regular people. What was I gonna say? I forgot what I was gonna say. Something about the it's okay, I forgot. You can ask your question, Ruth.
No, I was just saying that what you just, like, said, Damar, it's exactly my best friend, and she stopped because she is, like, tired all the time because it's taken a lot of her energy, and also she is annoyed by everyone's problem, So mm-hmm. she stopped it like maybe like 6 years ago. And she's like channeling like that energy because she always have a sense of a person, right? So she taken into psychology. So to put mm-hmm. like her energy into the ground, that's what she said, to like try to analyze it through a different perspective, which is kind of like, it's good for you and good for me too if I want to add something from a psychological perspective.
True. Can I ask Ruth, like, do you have like sensitivities?
Well, since I met them, yes.
Okay.
And that's, they told me like, well, cats always play with cats, dogs always play with dogs, so it's your kind of destiny.
True.
So yeah, but I'm not like anything. I can't read tarot. I'm just like seeing ghosts.
Oh, wow.
I'm the lowest level.
I see. Yeah. So like basically you have the talent, but you don't want to like actually hone it.
I don't really even think about that. So it never crossed my mind if I want to do that, you know. I like tarot cards because they were fun. Like, you know, you can buy different kind of tarot cards from different artists and I love that. Mm-hmm. But never try to like do it, you know.
But yeah. I see. Okay. Yeah, maybe the reason why we're talking about this today is maybe to like, wake you up.
No.
Wake you up. Like, Ruth, this is your responsibility.
Okay,
like,
Alex, now I'm gonna banting setir.
See, like she has that painting like at the back, like that's like something that Dukun would
this is New York actually.
That's some gothic stuff, Ruth. Like you're a goth, you have to own it. Like
have you heard of that? It was a time during when I was living in Kemang area, maybe around 2013 to 2015 ish, that people play with that game, the Pokemon game. Have you heard? That they always put the Pokemon in the cemetery so that people would go to the cemetery in the middle of the night to play Pokemon. And I used to live next to that cemetery, Jeruk Purut. So it always, they always packed the people like they were playing Pokemon at the cemetery. And I was like, damn, aren't you afraid of that like headless guy? the famous ghost from that.
They would rather get their points. They would rather catch Pokemons. It's funny because, like, you know, there's like a lot of like these like people try to make like pretty Instagram posts or reels about like, oh, you go into the forest and you're enchanted by fairies. And then one of my friends, she posted, yeah, in Indo, if you go to forest, what are you like? You're surrounded by kuntil, pocong, and gendrowo.